Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events, so stay tuned for tonight's special report on the baby boomers when we come back. You know, Americans today are interrogated, watched, measured, and counted more than at any time in our history. Surveillance and electronic record keeping of nearly every routine activity from bank deposits to medical visits has produced greater efficiency and security for us all. But it's also responsible for a very discernible erosion of our ability to live our lives free from outside scrutiny. Now, the federal government currently maintains an average of 15 files on every American, according to estimates by the Office of Management and Budget. Closer to home, state and local governments use computers to keep their own files on us, and a study conducted by the New York Committee on Open Government found that that state, New York, and its agencies operated 1,776 separate data systems containing 10,799 categories of information about New York residents. And every one of those systems contained between 2 and 10 million records. Now, this information about you is gained from 63 sources, and this information is gathered and stored in a very reasoned and logical manner for later retrieval and use. Now, would you like to know how your government, your bank, your insurance company, business and industry obtains all of this information about you? What are their sources? How is it stored? How is it retrieved? What do they want it for? Well, knowing how this information is gathered and what information is stored and what information you want to keep personal and private actually puts you in the driver's seat in your quest for privacy. Now, if you'd like more information about privacy and privacy issues, call us here at the law school. The number is 417-273-4967 and ask for our free general law CD package. And let me tell you how to train yourself to be just as personal and private as you want to be. Now, remember, it's educational, it's informative, it's entertaining. Best of all, it's free. That phone number again is 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, you can go to our website, georgegordon.org, send us an email request for that free general law CD package. Again, georgegordon.org, or call us direct at 417-273-4967. Do it right now while you're thinking about it before you forget. All right, we've been talking about the baby boomers, and we started off with the rosy picture from the AARP and the Department of Labor, and then we moved up a little bit until last program, and we took a look at some of the sobering realities of hyperinflation. Now, hyperinflation is the last resort. It's where governments end up. It's not where the government aimed the bullet to start with. That isn't where they wanted to get or where they wanted to be. But, you know, you make decisions like the Federal Reserve Central Bank, and we decide that we're going to print paper money. Ultimately, we're going to print more paper money than we have gold to back it. And so that led to 1933. In 1933, we couldn't pay our debts, and so we had to change the value of gold from $20 to $35. That's called a devaluation. So, in other words, we said to our creditors, well, we're not going to give you 100 cents on the dollar, so what we're going to do is give you about 60 cents on the dollar. All right, then we went on and we devalued again in 1971. We said, okay, too many of you guys are making demands on our gold hoard, so we're not going to pay you in gold anymore. That put us on this fiat currency. Now, this is your last step to economic collapse. So it's worked, you know, from 71, 81, 91, 2001. Well, in 2000, March of 2000, we ran out of time. The inevitable happened, and the economy cracked. So it was either massive deflation, and we've got to straighten our economy out, or we've got to massively inflate it. And so Alan Greenspan said, okay, let's inflate. And I imagine you got that from congressional leaders and the president. And so in 2001, they started to massively inflate, which is the only tool that the Federal Reserve has, inflation. They just print more money. That's what I told you. Robert Mugabe, the president or premier or whatever he's called over in Zimbabwe, he said, well, if we need more money for public purposes, we'll just print it. And that's where we are today. We're just printing it. Now, so far, we're only printing it at the rate of about 13%. But pretty soon, when hyperinflation really gets to cranking over here, we're going to be printing as much as 19% a day. That was the peak hyperinflation in the history of the world. Hungary in the 1950s hit 19% a day. Now, so far, we're only doing 13% a year in price inflation, which is distinct now from monetary inflation. See, monetary inflation is what the Federal Reserve does to create price inflation, which is a symptom, not the cause. Prices going up down at Walmart isn't the cause of inflation. It's the Federal Reserve printing too much money. And the way you keep central banks and governments from printing too much money is that you never tempt them. You use gold and silver coin. which is what our founding fathers did after the hyperinflation and collapse of our economy in 1783. They reorganized it and came out with the Monetary Act of 1792. It's called the Coinage Act of 1792. And they put into our Constitution, no state shall make anything but gold or silver coin a tender in payment of debt. From 1812 to 1912, there was no inflation. None. Zero. Zip. Zilch. Zilch. But today we have inflation running at the rate of 13% monetary and about 9% in actual price inflation in prices in the grocery store. And remember, they don't count food and energy. So if you don't eat and you don't drive, you're all right. I had a plumber come out here and do a little work for me today. He charged me $24 fuel. The fuel from his shop out here and back, he charged me $24. So that's the price of fuel at $3. Now, the price of fuel is headed to $6 a gallon here in America. And when fuel gets to $6 a gallon, I showed you in Zimbabwe, it's 1.2 million Zimbabwean dollars per gallon right now. It'll be that here in the United States when this thing runs its course. And as I pointed out last time, the tragedy of this is that all you people, all you baby boomers out there who have your 401ks and Kroger plans and your savings, you got $100, $200, $300, $400,000 in the bank, saved up, invested in stocks. And where is it going? Right down the toilet. How do I know that? It's what happened in Hungary. It's what happened in Germany. It's what happened in the United States. It's what happened in Bolivia, Peru, Argentina, Bolivia. Brazil. See, it's happened so many times before that he who fails to learn from history is bound to repeat its mistakes. And Americans don't seem to understand history. It isn't just Americans. People in general don't understand history and really don't care about it one way or the other. What they care about is what happened in Argentina in 2001 when their economy collapsed. Oh, they got real excited. They were out in the streets and they were rioting and jumping up and down, voting this guy in and voting that guy out. And, you know, people get excited. And they lost everything. Now, there's a methodology available to you right now today to save what you've got. That's right. You can save what you've got. I've told you this story many times. I'll tell it one more. Not at a mentor by the name of Russell Harvey. 1927, he sold out all of his stocks. I think it was $273 a share. It was Transamerica stock at the time. Later became Bank of America. He bought back in for $5 a share in 1935. The time to sell is now at the top. And then put it into cash, but not Federal Reserve note cash, because that's disintegrating right around your eyeballs. I mean, it's just disintegrating every day. What you need is gold or silver or wheat, corn, beans, honey, and oil, you know, something that's tangible. Now, we'll do a series of programs here on hyperinflation. I'll show you how this hyperinflation works and what causes it and get more into detail. But I said in the last program, I said, the government's going to pay every damn dime they owe you. They always do. Hell, the Hungarian government paid all those Hungarians everything they owed them. The German government paid those people everything they owed them. The problem is that the money didn't buy anything. So what's going to happen here is the inflation tax, which is what inflation is. Inflation is a tax, and it's a theft is what it really boils down to, because the government isn't telling you we're taking this in the form of a tax. They're taking it in the form of inflation. And that way, you're blaming Walmart for raising their prices, not the government and the Federal Reserve for raising the monetary aggregate or putting too much money into circulation. And that's caused by President Bush. He needs to fight the war in Iraq, and it costs $100 billion a year. So they just print the money and go fight it. They need Humvees. They just print the money and go down and buy them. They need money for New Orleans. They just print the money and go down and buy whatever they want to buy. Thousands of trailers to put people in. They just go out and buy them. All right, now all that money gets to floating around in the economy and it bids prices up. And that's where your monetary inflation comes, or the price inflation comes from the monetary inflation of just going out and spending the money. Now there's a solution to that. It ultimately runs its course. In Zimbabwe, it's about to the end. Pretty soon, people will no longer accept the Zimbabwe dollar. They will want to use American dollars or European euros or South African rands or anything. They'll go to barter. They'll use seashells and beads if need be, but they'll quit using those just simply because it's just a waste of time, effort, and energy. And that ultimately will happen here in the United States. Now, the promised baby boomer retiree benefits is going to cost the U.S. economy, each household, about $500,000 each. So says USA Today, an analysis shows. Now, that's $500,000. Now, how many of you out there have $500,000? I would venture a guess to say that there's not very many of us that have $500,000. And that's what it's going to cost us when it comes time for me to retire. If I was to get on Social Security and Medicare, along with millions of other people, the ultimate end of this is it's going to cost each one of you young people out there paying for our retirement $500,000 each. You don't have that kind of money. So what happens is the government doesn't have it either, so they're just going to print it. And you don't have enough energy in your body at today's prices to go out and create that kind of wealth. So we're just going to print the money and rob all the people who have saved their money over the last 40 or 50 years. So all of you good folks out there who have been saving your money, you know, you took your paycheck and you took 10% of it in 1972 and you put it into stocks, bonds, you put it into savings of some kind, you're going to get ripped off. You're going to lose it. Now, the U.S. taxpayers have liabilities of more than $500,000 per household for health care and other benefits for retirees promised by the federal, state, and local governments, the USA Today reports. Now, that's according to a USA Today analysis based on official government reports. Federal, state, and local governments increased taxpayer liabilities by about $10 trillion during the past 2 years to $57.8 trillion, or about $510,678 per household. Do you get that number? I mean, we're talking about numbers here. They're just absolutely incomprehensible. $57.8 trillion. A trillion now is 1,000 billion, and a billion is 1,000 million, and a million is 1,000 thousand. You know, most of us are down here dealing in $100 bills, and yet these people, you know, they're running us into debt, into the trillions of dollars. We just don't have that kind of money. Now, normal people would say, well, they'll go bankrupt. No, no, governments don't go bankrupt. They just print their way out of it, and they'll do that, and they'll succeed at it. They're going to pay all their debts off. And the people that are going to take it in the shorts are all you people out there that have been saving your money. So today, let's suppose you got $100,000 in the bank. Well, today, if you took your $100,000 out of the bank and you went down, you converted it all into pinto beans. And last time I was in Walmart, they were 42 cents a pound. So let's take $100,000, plug it into my famous Sharpie 1197. There's $100,000, and I'm going to divide that by 0.42. You could buy 238,095 pounds of pinto beans. Let's divide that by 2,000. And you could buy 119 tons of pinto beans, rounded off to 120 tons. All right? Now, let's just take price inflation, which is occurring right now today in food. The food price inflation just got a number the other day, 26% over last year. That means that pinto beans next year are going to be 26% higher than they are this year. Let's be reasonable. Let's just take the price inflation of the general economy, just the price inflation, not monetary. Monetary is 13%. We'll take price. Price inflation is around 10%. It's actually 10.9, but I'm going to back off to 10%. So let's take our 42 cents and then times 0.10, and that's 4.2 cents. So that's 42 cents plus 4 cents is 46 cents. So next year it's going to cost 46 cents for those pinto beans down there at Walmart. So my problem is, should I draw my money out of the bank today and run down and buy 120 tons of pinto beans? Or should I leave my money in the bank and buy those pinto beans as I need them? All right, so let's take the same $100,000, which is what I'm going to have in the bank next year, and let's or divide that rather by 0.46. That means that I can get 217,391 pounds divided by 2,000 is 108 tons. All right, so here's what I'm going to lose. I'm going to lose 11 tons of pinto beans by keeping my money in the bank. 11 tons. Now somebody says to me, well, the bank is paying me 3% interest. Okay, so your $100,000 is going to pay you $3,000 interest, for which you'll have to pay a capital gain tax of 15% on the $3,000. And then you'll have the balance left over. So you won't lose the whole 11 tons, but you're going to lose something like 9 tons. See where we're going with this, boys and girls? In other words, your capital in the bank is shrinking. And so whether it's your retirement over the next 10 or 15 years, or whether it's the amount of pinto beans that you're going to collect right now, I tell my students, I think, boys and girls, you'd be better off, take your money out of the bank, go convert it to pinto beans, put it in 50-gallon barrels, and put it in a container. Now you can sit there and say, well, I don't really want 100 tons of pinto beans. I understand that. Why don't you buy 5 tons of pinto beans and 5 tons of corn, 5 tons of something else? Why don't you hang on to that? Because remember in the last program I showed you, there are some things like matches that are just unobtainable in Rhodesia today, Zimbabwe. Gasoline is just practically unobtainable, period. The problem with gasoline is that it doesn't keep. And then matches keep, so I would suggest that, well, maybe you might want some canned chicken, canned beef, canned this and that and another thing. But that's what you're facing here, and that's what they're telling you here. Medical News Today, if you want the article, it's www.medicalnewstoday.com. Promised baby boomer retiree benefits to cost U.S. households $500,000 each. So I put that one over here on my pile, like I did the rest of them. Now let's take a look at another one. Your Baby Boomer Retirement, The Nightmare in Our Future, by John C. Goodman, president of the National Center for Policy Analysis. And it's a testimony before the House Ways and Means Committee. This was done on Thursday, May 19th, 2005. So 2 years ago, more than 2 years ago, this guy goes into Congress and he says, okay, this is the House Ways and Means Committee. This is the committee that figures out how are we going to pay for all this stuff. And he gave him this testimony. He said, in 2011, the first group of baby boomers will reach the age of 65. Some will begin claiming early retirement in just 3 years. By the time they're through, 77 million of them will have ceased working and paying taxes and will have begun receiving taxpayer-funded health care and pension benefits. This will create a financial train wreck for Social Security. I'm going to underline that. Now, here's a guy that says this is going to create a financial train wreck. That's pretty heavy-duty language. He says Social Security is going to have a train wreck. Medicare and Medicaid and all other programs for the elderly. Other countries in the developed world face even bigger problems. We're not in this alone, boys and girls. The other nations of the world are also in the same boat, and they're going to have bigger problems. Let's go back historically now, take a look at the 1920s. The Great Depression was triggered by the collapse of the British pound in 1928. So the British went to work on their pound, just like we're going to work on our dollar today. We're trying to maintain the dollar above 80 basis points. And the dollar, the last time I saw, was down around 80.12, and then it rallied to about 80.70, and now, I don't know, they said Monday was going to be the big test day. I'll watch the news tonight, and we'll see what happened to the dollar today. Well, when the British pound, see, the British in 1928, we were talking about the British Empire. We're talking about Britain as the number one power in the world. Today, it's the dollar, and it's America, and we're the number one power in the world. When the American dollar breaks, just like the pound in 28, then our economy is going to break. And it doesn't happen overnight. It doesn't happen in a week or 10 days. It occurs slowly over months and months and years. The Great Depression unfolded beginning in 1928. And it finally concluded with Pearl Harbor on December the 7th, 1941. And there were some ups and downs in between. But basically, the Great Depression was a long-term event. It took several years for it to hit bottom. It hit bottom in 1933. So from 28 to 33, it took some years to hit bottom. And then when it hit the bottom, it kind of bounced around on the bottom until 37. Then in 37, we got a bounce. And then we had some ups and downs, and then finally World War II broke out. And when World War II broke out, then that was the stimulus for the next boom cycle, and then onward and upward from there. All right, now we're at the point where we're about ready to break. We're about to where 1928 and the British pound was at that time. Now, when this happened, and the Great Depression occurred, it created such social and financial pressures around the world that it ultimately culminated in World War II. History being our guide, I would conclude then that when this culminates over a period of time, it will culminate in World War III. World War III with nuclear weapons gets into the Book of Revelation, and we're talking about some heavy-duty, great end-time events. I mean, scary events that are biblical in nature. I mean, little guys like us, you know, can't quite visualize a 200-million-man army being destroyed in the Valley of Megiddo with blood to the horses' bridles. You know, I'm just George Gordon, you know, I'm Joe Sixpack out here, and you start talking about 200-million-man armies and blood, you know, 3 feet deep, you know, I get kind of, what in the hell are you talking about, boy? Now, we can take a look at the history in the past, and if history is a guide to the future, then we can pretty well predict, well, that's probably what's going to happen the next time. So it's always been in the past, why would it be different in the future? If you put the same ingredients in, you're probably going to get about the same product out. You know, when you're baking a cake, ladies, you know, you put the ingredients in, then you're going to get a result. If you repeat those ingredients, you're probably going to repeat the result. If you change the ingredients, you're going to change the result. So, you know, people have been saying over the last 20, 30 years, we need to change the ingredients that we're putting into our economy or we're going to end up with hyperinflation like the Germans. We didn't change the ingredients, and I submit to you, we're probably going to end up with the same outcome that the Germans did. Same outcome that was always been the result of loose fiscal monetary policy. Now, as it relates to the baby boomers and their retirement, you see, we've been sold a bill of goods. We expect to receive something for all that money that we've been paying in. Now, I quit paying in back in 78. I took a look at these numbers, you know, years ago, and I said, this thing is headed for a train wreck, and I'm going to get off this boat. Now, 78 turned into 88, and then 98, and now we're headed for 08. That's 30 years ago that I dropped out of Social Security, and I'm not entitled to Social Security, and I don't want Social Security, but I saved $141,000. I paid in $12,000 between 1950 and 78, and then from 78 to 2002, I would have paid in another $141,000. I'd had $153,000 in the game. And then I could have started drawing out, and I think that the draw was $805. Now, the other day I looked, and I think it's around $11,000 a year that we would be getting back. If I was getting my $11,000 a year, I'd get it for about, you know, I'm pushing 7, you know, 5, 6, 7 years. I'm expected to die in 75. And I would have collected about $100,000 of it back. So I would have paid $50,000 to have somebody write me 120 checks. I said, I don't need to pay some guy $50,000 to write me 150 checks or 120 checks. I think I can handle that myself. So I dropped out of the program, took the money myself, did something else with it, burned it in airplane gas, you know, chased whores down to the warehouse, smoked away 10 cigars. I spent my money, but I'm happy with the way I spent it. I'm not complaining about it. Now, if you're one of the baby boomers and you're sitting there saying, well, I expect these benefits, well, I, for one, don't think you're going to get them. Not because Social Security is insolvent, but I think that hyperinflation is going to set in before the Social Security system can go belly up. See, there's enough people paying in and there's enough dollars going on right now. But that New Orleans hit, that 9/11 hit, that Iraqi war hit. Now, I was running a company one time called Atlantis Manufacturing Company, and we took a look at the numbers one time back in 1978. And I had a partner at the time, and I took a look at the numbers, and I said, this company's upside down. Yeah, we're meeting the payroll, and yeah, we got sales, and yeah, we got money in the bank, but this company's upside down. This is unsustainable. And the president himself has said that this Social Security thing is unsustainable. This balance of payments deficit is unsustainable. The attack on the dollar, the value of the dollar, it's unsustainable. So I had a choice to make. It was either bankrupt the company or we've got to make some major financial changes. So I said, well, let's see if we can save the company. The United States of America isn't salvageable. And if I had the bottom line numbers in 1978 that the United States of America has now, I wouldn't have tried to save it because it wasn't salvageable. But the Atlantis company was salvageable, but boy, we really had to work our hearts out in order to make that thing come out. So I went around to my creditors, the 28 creditors, I went around to the creditors and I said, listen, we're upside down. And I'm going to file for bankruptcy and you're going to get zero, zip, zilch, unless you agree to my reorganization plan. I want to pay you. I'll owe you the money. I don't deny it. But with our income and our outgo and our sales, somebody ain't going to get paid. Now, you got 28 creditors, and all those creditors want to get paid. And they're not all going to get paid. So you got to go to them one at a time, and you got to pay somebody a little bit, and you got to pay the next guy a little bit, or you got to pay somebody nothing for some period of time. So I went around and said, I'm not going to pay any of you anything for 6 months. Nothing. But I need to continue buying from you because I need the raw materials to make my products. If you cut me off and say I won't sell to you, well, then you're dead in the water. If you want to get the money that I owe you, then we have to earn it. We have to actually go out and produce products, sell it, make a profit, and take those profits and pay you with it. And if we don't do that, you're not going to get paid. All of the creditors said, yep, we'll go along with you, Gordon, because it's either that or we get nothing. So I paid nobody for 6 months. At the end of 6 months, we had turned the ship around. We actually were making enough profits that now we can start making payments. I came back to the same creditors and I said, okay, we've got the ship turned around. We are now making money. We're making a profit. But our profits aren't great. They're not great enough that we could service this debt on any kind of an intelligent program. You know, like reducing the principal by 10% a year or something like that and paying it all off in 10 years. But our sales are growing and they're growing geometrically. If we don't have to pay you right away and we'll let the geometric progression come into play, well, we'll have 15 customers, we'll turn to 30 customers, and then we can pay you twice as much next year. So we started making token payments, just to show good faith to our creditors. You know, we owe you $10,000, so here's $100, a token. It isn't an intelligent payment, but it tells you that we're serious, and all of my creditors went along with me for the next 6 months. And little by little, within 36 months, that's from 78 to 81, we were able to pay everybody off. We paid everybody that we owed. And we turned the company around, then we sold out in 81 and closed her down because of the recession. Now, the United States government doesn't have that option because the debt load at $58 trillion is unserviceable. Unserviceable. You see, you can't operate your business. You can't make enough profit off of this business to service that debt at any period of time. You're already upside down. Now, we're not upside down officially. And so like Enron, you know, the inner circle, they all knew the thing was going upside down. So they sold their stock, you know, while the price was high, and they got out. You can rest assured that George Bush is not invested in United States savings bonds. George Bush is not invested in United States dollars. Neither is Donald Rumsfeld or Dick Cheney. Those people are invested in something else, something that's got tangible value. Because when this thing turns turtle, there's going to be lots of losses in those kinds of investments. And so as those people lose their shirts, there are other people who are going to be making lots of money. The guy that buys the pinto beans today at 42 cents a pound is actually going to make 10% on his pinto beans over the next year because the price of pinto beans is going to go up 10%. He actually doesn't make any profit. He just maintains or hangs on to his $100,000 value. He's not going to make a profit, but he's not going to lose his investment capital. And in the investment world, boys and girls, it is absolutely imperative that we hang on to our capital. Our capital is the name of the game. We never risk our capital. I got to give you a reminder here that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Remember, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard worldwide over the Internet daily. Now, for more information about The Law School and The Law Hour, please go to our website. It's georgegordon.org. Now, the law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals by prearrangement. Now, the law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. If you'd like more information, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has a radio log schedule and archives, and that can be accessed through our website, georgegordon.org. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest, and the Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events, and we do it 7 days a week. The Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the Law School at 417-273-4967. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief. And the Law Hour editorial review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program, and we often endorse and recommend books, periodicals, papers, and newsletters to our listeners. These endorsements are recommendations that we give. here on the Law Hour, don't mean that those authors and publications are necessarily going to recommend us or reciprocate. Most of the authors and publications that we use here on the Law Hour are hostile or political or religious or economic or sectarian or racial, or they may be ethnic partisans whose viewpoint is not totally endorsed by the Law Hour and editorial review. Now, these opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine. They're mine alone. They don't represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertisers or the beliefs and opinions of sponsors, management, or staff of the network or of this local radio station. Now, for more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, then please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org. There's many pages there to tell you most of what you want to know about us. Now, you can call us at the law school, 417-273-4967, order one of those free general law CD packages. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, I might also point out, I oftentimes get emails in here and they say, I was listening to this radio station and it's really a poor station, or they don't carry anymore or something like that. Well, listen, on the internet, on our webpage, georgegordon.org, we carry more than 2,500 of these Law Hour broadcasts. They're all archived there. And they're archived by title and date, so that if, you know, you're listening to a program here called The Boomers, and you say to yourself, well, gee, I'd like to send that to my dad. Well, if you'll go to our webpage, georgegordon.org, and just go to Baby Boomers, and it'll be there by date, so pick out this date. It's it'll be about August 15th, or in that week of August 15th, 2007. Or just look up alphabetically Baby Boomers, under B for Baby Boomers, and you can get the same seven programs. And they're on MP3, and there's a couple other formats, and you can download them free. Don't cost anything. And then if you miss a program, you know, you were driving home from work tonight and you heard this program, but tomorrow night you're busy doing something else and you missed tomorrow night's program, well, okay, you can always pick it up on the internet. Now, a lot of times people, well, I don't have a computer. Well, hell, everybody's got a computer. And if you don't have one, everybody else does. So go over to your friend Bob and say, hey, Bob, there's this program I was listening to, and there's a guy on there by the name of Gordon, and he has a website, and it's called georgegordon.org. Could you bring that up? And he'll put it around a little bit, and he'll bring up georgegordon.org. And then bring up our archives. Just, you know, tell him, punch in archives. And he'll do that, and then tell him, punch in Baby Boomers. And he'll punch in Baby Boomers, and they'll flip up there. Would you record those for me? And then if he's got any recording equipment over there, he doesn't need too much, and he can just push a button over here. We got a computer in here that flips those out. And I think you could download those. And a lot of times people will write me letters and emails and say, oh, my God, how can I get you, and blah, blah, blah. That's the way you do it. The best way to do it is just get it right off the internet. That's why we put it up there and we archive it. All right, now with that in mind, let's go back to Baby Boomers over here. Remember the train wreck? Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid are headed for a train wreck. So says the policy analysis of this organization, which is called the House Ways and Means Committee of the Congress of the United States. I thought I'd tell you, Nancy Pelosi knows what's coming. So does every other member of Congress. They're not out here telling you lay people that, because, you see, it, like in the Atlanta story, I never went to my employees and told them how dire the financial condition of the company was. Had I gone to my employees and said, we are bankrupt, we're upside down, my God, I don't think we can make it, my employees would have all gone out and found a job somewhere else, and I'd be left without a workforce. I told my employees, everything's wonderful. I was lying to them. I told you that the other day. I said, I'm a businessman. I'm a paid professional liar. Cheat and fraud. That's what businessmen do. That's what Ken Lay did at Enron. I mean, come on, guys, let's grow up and get real. The president of the United States is a businessman. He cannot tell you the truth about the American economy. If he did, all of you people would panic. My God, you'd go berserk. You'd jerk all your money out of your 401k. And then everything would go to hell in a handbasket. Not everybody is going to get off the Titanic. Let's understand it. Not everybody is going to get off the great ship America. There's going to be casualties here. Now, some people are going to get off the ship, and they're going to take more with them than others. For instance, right now, let me give you a little number here for you to tuck away in your heart. The biggest commodity trade in the world is gold. $10 billion a day. My God. I won't even plug that into my calculator, because my little calculator only goes out to a billion, and this is $10 billion a day times 360 days in a year, well, probably 300 days a year on the London Metals Exchange. 83% of it is traded in paper. So when somebody buys $10,000 worth of gold or $10 million worth of gold, they don't bring a truck over here and then get guys out here, you know, with dollies and carts and load up, you know, bars of gold in the truck and haul it someplace. Come on, kids, let's grow up and get real. Nobody has physical possession of the gold. It's in a warehouse someplace, in the Bank of England, or it's in the Federal Reserve, or it's in the Central Bank, or it's in the, you know, the New York Commodity Exchange. You know, somebody's got it somewhere in a warehouse. But, you know, you and I and the rest of the people out here, we don't have this gold. Now, 83% of this $10 billion a year, that's $8.3 billion a day, not a year, a day, that's being traded, is being traded in paper. Now, there's a significant portion of the gold that's actually traded, 17% of it. is actually traded in trucks. They've actually got the gold moving around to people like me, you know, that are crazies, right-wing reactionary fanatics. You know, we take physical possession. Now, the gold that's on paper has been sold into the future. There's a lot more paper running around than there is physical gold. So if you took all the physical gold in the world today, and everybody who's holding a piece of paper that says, okay, I'll take possession now, they would be short 2,500 tons, that's the amount of gold that we produce per year, 2,500 tons a year, for 15 years into the future. How many tons is that? 2,500 times 15 years. They'd be short 37,500 tons of gold. Okay, now the system works okay because everybody believes that. Anytime I want to collect my gold, all I got to do is go down and get it. And the truth of the matter is, they can. Anybody can. Any 1, 2, 5, or 10 of you can take your paper gold and you can go down and convert that and get the physical stuff and take it home and put it on the floor and push it around like Scrooge McDuck with your little toy tractor. Now, everybody can't do that because if everybody does that, we're 37,500 tons short. In fact, if too many people do that, it'll cause a run on the bank. That's what it'll cause. And of course, we don't want that. And the president doesn't want that. And the Congress doesn't want that. And you don't want that. And I don't want that. None of us want to ever have to face the reality of the baby boomer retirement. But it's a train wreck that's coming next year. Well, it begins next year. It isn't going to collapse everything overnight, you know, when the first boomer goes down. Hey, I'm a baby boomer, and he signs up for Social Security, and the economy disintegrates. No, that isn't going to happen. But, you know, a few million of them, you know, are going to retire next year, and then there'll be a few million the year after, and so on up the line. And it accelerates. And it is accelerating at the very same time that the revenue coming in is decelerating, which is the problem I had at the Atlantis Company. I looked at that, and I said, uh-oh, this company's upside down. Now, do we save it or do we bankrupt it? Well, I looked at it and I took it to a couple of my buddies and we said, well, we could save this. I mean, it's going to take some time, effort, and energy and work, but we could probably save this. Is it worth saving? No, we looked at the assets and we looked at the investment. Yeah, I think, you know, do we want to walk away from it and take it in the shorts or do we want to work a little harder and save it? Now, America could have been saved 20 years ago when President Reagan came into office. And there was an opportunity. A guy by the name of Paul Volcker, he was the chairman of the Federal Reserve. He took over the Fed, and, Jimmy Carter was president. Let's see, when did he do that? About 78, 79, something like that. Volcker, he's about 7 foot two. He must weigh 350 pounds. I mean, he's a monster, this guy, Paul Volcker. He's an insider. I don't think that he's working for us or on our team. But anyway, the insiders decided, you know, the Illuminati decided, well, we're not ready to bankrupt America yet, so we're not going to pull the plug. Let's save this thing. And Volcker raised interest rates. Hell, he went up to about 12, 14%. We went into instant recession. I mean, the world just... But it saved the American economy. The price of gold went to $800 an ounce, you know. But Volcker saved it. Now, if this guy Bernanke were to do the same thing today, I don't think he could do it. I don't think we'd get the same result. And I'm pretty sure that Bernanke knows that, and I'm pretty sure that all the Wall Street analysts know that. I mean, everybody that's reading these kinds of papers here. And by the way, if you want a copy of this, let's see if I can get you a copy. This thing here is called The Baby Boomer Retirement, The Nightmare of Our Future by John C. Goodman. And I don't have anything on here that says, you know, go to www. So I'm just going to have to give you this, and I guess this is what Dirk went to. If you were to put Baby Boomer Retirement, The Nightmare in Our Future by John C. Goodman, president of the National Center for Policy Analysis, and more than likely you might be able to get this from the House Ways and Means Committee from the USA.gov website. This was testimony given on Thursday, May 19th, 2005. So I think if you use Thursday, May 19th, 2005, you probably get this report. It's a sobering report. It's a, you know, it's the report that says this is where we're at. This is what the board of directors gets told by the CEO when they come in on Tuesday. And we say, all right, boys, let me sit you down and tell you where the, you know, the company controller comes in, gives the report, and he says, okay, here's where we're at. We're upside down. And then some member on the board says, when's the day of reckoning? And he says, June 17th, 36 months from today, we will not be able to meet the payroll. So we all know as insiders that we're responsible for this, so we need to sell our stock. We need to get our assets out of here so that the shareholders can take it in the shorts. You know, nothing personal, you shareholders out there, but you know God told you, don't have or don't deal in unjust weights and balances. That's in Leviticus 19, 35 and 36 and Deuteronomy 25. Listen, he told you, no, don't do that. Now, you insist on buying stocks and bonds and 401ks and Krogs and Federal Reserve notes and savings accounts and checking accounts, don't you? I mean, it's the American way. I mean, you know, this is the choice that you made, and now there's a conclusion that comes from this. Now, some of you people out there may be smart enough to say, well, I got 100,000 bucks over here. I think I'll convert that to pinto beans today at 42 cents. And some of you are going to sit there and say, this guy's a raving lunatic. I think I'll change channels and get a little better program with better music. And I don't blame you. I mean, hell, this is sobering stuff, and it's kind of scary. But then on the other hand, you know, the 2008, 2009, 10, 11, 12, 15, 18, 20, you know, those years are coming. And for many of you people, you're going to be alive and kicking, just like the people down in Argentina, you know. 2001 came, and they got wiped out, and then 2002, 3, 5, and 7 came, and those people are recovering. They just had to start over again at zero is all. So if you're prepared to start over again at zero, you know, just keep on doing what you're doing. Chuck, just keep on trucking. Now, if on the other hand, you're sitting there saying, no, I don't think I want to have to reinvent the wheel. I don't want to do this over again. Well, then maybe you better start thinking about, well, how am I going to get off this boat? How am I going to get my stuff off of here? Here in the United States, we've made promises to senior citizens that far exceed what we can pay for at our current tax rate. As a result, these future retirees will have to either rely more on private savings than previous generations. For this reason, we need programs that encourage private sector saving. The ideal would be to encourage private saving and reduce future government entitlement obligations at the same time. This could be accomplished with personal retirement accounts. Okay, so let's suppose George Bush comes up to you or Nancy Pelosi and says, okay, we're going to cut Social Security benefits by 10%. How do you think that's going to play in the 2008 elections? Come on. You people all know, the Republicans know, the Democrats know, you can't cut these entitlements or benefits. And this goes back to ancient Athens and ancient Rome. You see, democracy doesn't work. And it doesn't work because as soon as the people find that they can vote their largesse out of the public treasury, they bankrupt the nation and it collapses. It's always been the case in the past. That's why our founding fathers loathed democracy. And that's why George Bush is out busy selling it. You see, in order for us to go into the New World Order, we got to have a democracy. And this republic is being converted to a democracy. Democracy turns into mob rule. Mob rule turns into martial law. Martial law turns into dictatorship, and George Bush stays in power, along with the Republican. Now, that's the way I think this game is going to be played out. Now, I'm not going to stop George and the neocons, and I'm not going to stop the war in Iraq, and I'm not going to stop the price of pinto beans going up 10% this year. But George Gordon and you and your family and your Uncle Louie and everybody, you know, you can take steps to alleviate the problem for yourself. I can't save the Titanic, but I think I can save my own sorry hind end off of the boat of it by myself. You know, if anybody in his right mind knew what was going to happen on the Titanic, he wouldn't have bought a ticket. But you know, once you've bought the ticket, and all of us are on the Titanic, I mean, the great ship America's already on the high seas. Now, there's anything that you and I are going to do that's going to change Wall Street or the Federal Reserve or Ben Bernanke or George Bush or the war in Iraq. But there's a lot that I can do personally. So I went out and I bought some pinto beans. I was in Sam's the other day, and I saw pinto beans at 42 cents, and so I bought 500 pounds. And when I checked out, you know, they're looking at me like, what the hell's the matter with this guy? Buying 500 pounds, 10 sacks, 50 pounds to a sack. I bought 10 sacks of pinto beans, 42 cents a pound. I thought that was a pretty good buy. I can remember a few years back, they were 30 cents a pound. You know, back when George Bush came into office, we're paying 30 cents a pound for pinto beans. Now we're paying 42. Next year, they'll be 46. I imagine they'll be $35,800 a pound here, you know, at some point in time. And the reason I thought I'd buy these beans up front and put them over here in my pantry, you know, 500,000 pounds, is because I could probably use those beans, you know, to feed my family over the next, you know, over the next 4 or 5 years. And those pinto beans, they keep for a long time. I've got some pinto beans here that I put in quart jars and vacuum pack. Hell, I've had them for 15, 20 years. I've been stockpiling a little bit of food over here. And a guy said the other day, wrote me an email, said, well, when this thing collapses, I'll know where to go. Come on, let's grow up and get real. Son, I don't know where you live, but if you could come all the way from where you are to Isabella, Missouri, kill me and take everything that I've got. I'm not really sure that you could accomplish all of that, but if you could, it might solve one family's problem, but what in the hell are the rest of all you families that are coming here to steal it from me? I mean, after the one guy steals it, well, you guys are going to be fighting among yourselves. No, that's crazy. You've got to have your own supply. Every family, when I was a kid, every family had a pantry, and every family had a one-year supply. It wasn't a Mormon in the bunch. I'll take that back. Ronnie Mitchell. The Mitchells were Mormons. But they weren't the guiding light of the people of Corbell, California. The guiding light of the people of Corbell, California in 1940, 44, 45, 47 was that common sense says that you need to prepare for yourself. And so Mrs. Johnson had a year's supply in her pantry, and everybody, you know, the ladies were always busy canning and putting stuff together and putting it on the shelf. And when we bought pinto beans, they came in 100-pound sacks. When we bought flour, they came in 100-pound sacks. And there was two drawers, you know, that kind of leaned out, and one of them had cornmeal, and the other one had flour in it, 100 pounds each. That's what you ate out of, cornmeal and flour. So I'm just suggesting now that you baby boomers out there, you know, take a page out of history here and start thinking for yourselves, because if you think Social Security and Medicare is going to be there for you, that's fine. And if they are, that's wonderful. But I kind of don't think they're going to be there. And I think hyperinflation is going to do away with them long before they collapse of their own accord. Now, they're going to collapse of their own accord about 2020. But I don't think we're going to get out that far. I think hyperinflation is going to come in here first. And he talks about the cash flow problem. He says, in a pay-as-you-go system, what matters most is cash flow. And the cash flow drain that elderly entitlement programs portend is not a problem of the distant future, as some argue. The problem has already begun. the cash flow problems here today. And George Bush, to his credit, a couple, 3 years ago, he came out and he says, we got to solve this Social Security problem. And I'm telling you, everybody shot him down. They said, like hell. Well, okay, that was a decision that you made back in 04 or 05. You said, we're not changing Social Security. We're leaving it just exactly the way it is. Well, okay. I had that problem with the Atlantis Company, and I could have said, well, we're not changing anything. We're just going to keep going just like we're going right now today. Until June 9th, 3 years from now, when we won't be able to meet the payroll. Only the government will meet the payroll. They'll just write it out. They'll just write the checks out and send them. Now, you know, I wish I could have done that at the Atlantis Company, but of course they call that counterfeiting. They won't let you do that. Governments can do that. Governments have the power to counterfeit. Governments have the power to coin and mint money. But unfortunately, the money that they put out there doesn't correspond with the amount of pinto beans that are out there in the marketplace. Government can expand the amount of dollars, but they can't expand the number of pounds of pinto beans on the shelf. And so the people that have the dollars today are the guys that are out buying up the pinto beans. So I'm just throwing that out for a little thought for you, that maybe instead of so many dollars in the bank, maybe a few more pinto beans on the shelf might be in order. Social Security and Medicare have been receiving more in payroll taxes than they've been paying out in benefits for several decades. Last year, the two programs combined spent more than they took in, requiring a general revenue subsidy of $45 billion. The magnitude of the deficits in these two programs will soar in the years to come. So now Medicare and Social Security go together like a hand in a glove. And while Social Security is still putting a few dollars in the pot, which are, by the way, all being taken out and spent on the war in Iraq, but it's still building up a surplus, Medicare is deficit, and the deficit's $45 billion, and it's growing geometrically. So pretty soon it's going to be $90 billion, and then it'll be $180 billion, and then it'll be $360 billion, and so on up the line. Boys and girls, it's unsustainable. The president told you that, the Congress has told you that, and every newsletter is telling you that it's unsustainable, children. It's time to wake up and smell the coffee. Hey, we're running out of time again. I'm going to have to cut it off here and remind you that you're listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review, sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide over the Internet daily. For more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, remember our website is georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school. We're open to individuals by prearrangement, and the Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. To order yours, just call the Law School at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Hey, our time's up. We're going to have to leave it right there, so we'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station, God willing, of course. Until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.